And now, fighting out of the red corner, CagePotato.com!
Bruce Buffer, everybody! Let's hear it for him!
And I'm not going to touch that one with a 25-foot pole, Morrow.
I'd like to touch it with a 25-centimeter one, but instead we'll just call the fight as now with Neon.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Yo, this your boy Kimbo Slice. Check this out. When you ain't got shit to do and you're in front of your computer, I want you to read CagePotato.com. CagePotato.com. Because tapping out is for bitches.
My name is Carl the Heat Breeze, and listen to Bum Rush Radio.
I'm Steve Velasquez, and Cage Potato is the best.
This is Jorge Rivera, and you're listening to the Bum Rush Radio Show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Bum Rush Radio Show on the Cage Potato Radio Network. I'm Ben Goldstein. With me are my lovely assistants, Mike Russell and Chad Dundas. It's the first radio show of 2011, you guys, and there's already a lot to talk about. We're glad that you're along for the ride. Later on the show, King Mo will be joining us. I thought we could just start out with a little postmortem on last weekend's card, UFC 125, Edgar versus Maynard. I think we've all settled down by now. So, let's get into it. The main event ended in a draw. Both guys seemed pretty devastated after the result was announced. I guess they both thought they had the decision in the bag. Did either of you guys have a problem with the final result? You know, should Edgar have won? Should Maynard have won? Or did the draw make sense to you? Mike, what do you think?
I think it's one of those things that could have gone either way. Personally, mm-hmm. when I was scoring it the first time around, I saw it in Maynard's favor. After I rewatched, I saw where some of the other rounds could have gone either way. So,
yeah.
And even looking at the judges' scorecards, the only one I didn't get was the one that definitively gave it to Maynard, like gave him like all four, or sorry, to Edgar, gave him the last four rounds. It was like, come on, how can you give him all four rounds? The first round was, you know, there's been some debate about whether it could have been a 10-7 round. I don't think it was that. I don't know. It was probably as dominant a round as I've ever seen. But I think, you know, there'd have to be maybe some more. I don't know. I don't even know what constitutes a 10-7 round. But yeah, I think, you know, it's been debated and everybody's got their own opinion on it, but I don't think it's a bad decision. I think it basically after rewatching it, I think it should have been a draw.
Yeah, no, I agree with you too. And as far as the judging, I think, you know, some of these judges get into a momentum thing where if it's close, you sort of just give it to the champ. You know, Edgar was able to rebound from that first round. So if he's doing okay, you just give him each round. But yeah, I sort of scored it even as well. And as far as the 10-7 thing, you know, that clearly was not a 10-7 round. And it was, you know, if a judge even wanted to give it a 10-9, I could sort of understand just in the sense that Edgar was able to get his sort of stuff together and avoid being knocked down for like the last minute of the fight. He was starting to throw his own punches. You know, I definitely, you know, a 10-8 is when you're just controlled from bell to bell. And, you know, I thought it was a 10-8, but Edgar was not dominated for like the last minute. So, you know, whatever. He avoided a 10-7 at the very least. Chad, how did you score it? And were you satisfied with the draw?
Well, I don't think a draw can ever be satisfying. And I think that's the only negative really about the scoring. Personally, I did have it. I actually scored it a draw too, just because I thought Edgar or Maynard won the first round 10-8. And then I had it 3-1 for Edgar from then on out. So yeah, though it's, you know, it's like kissing your sister is what they say, but I thought the draw was the right score there. It is kind of, it seems like Frankie Edgar must have some kind of clause in his contract where he has to fight everyone twice, which is kind of a drag for him, I guess. But I'm actually sort of excited to see the rematch, which, you know, leading up to the event, it was probably like the least anticipated UFC title fight in a while, possibly one of the more anticipated rematches. So you got to give credit for both guys for going out there and turning in a good show.
Yeah, I wonder if the draw was sort of like the best thing that could have happened, since now we're interested in both of them. It's not like we're just interested in the winner coming out of that fight. It's like both of them were sort of put over with fans, and we'll actually be looking forward to their next fight. So I don't know. I think it definitely turned out well. As far as, you know, a draw is never satisfying, I don't know, man. As Mike was saying, you know, oh, the fight, a lot of these rounds could go either way. The fight could have gone either way. I don't think it's very satisfying when you just sort of, with judges, just sort of choose a winner when the fight can go either way.
Sure. Unless you're Anthony Pettis.
Well, huh? Are you saying he didn't deserve that that decision?
No. I'm saying that if they would have chosen a winner, he would have had a fight coming up. Because
are you talking about the Henderson
fight? No. I'm saying that he should have, he's probably, apparently, you know, there's different stories that came out that's, you know, Dana said that it was him that made the decision. Mm-hmm. And then there's another story that I read that, I guess it was that from the Middle Easy rumor mill where they said that Anthony Pettis was the one that talked Dana into it. You know, like Anthony Pettis now after that kick has Dana's ear, you know, he's got, I don't know that he's got that kind of pull just yet, but
yeah.
It's interesting to note that if it did happen, that's the way that it might have happened. But yeah, I don't know. He's on the sidelines now. So does he take a fight in the interim or does, you know, there's a big risk. You look at what happened to Josh Grisby on the card.
Yeah. I think he should fight. What's going to happen, he's probably going to screw himself out of getting that title shot, because what should happen logically is Anthony Pettis, you know, taking this time to fight a top contender. You know, maybe it's Clay Guida, maybe it's the winner of Soteropoulos Seaver, you know, maybe it's Kenny Florian. You know, if he beats any of those guys, man, now he really establishes himself and he could just start calling himself really the number one contender. But, you know, any of those guys could realistically beat Pettis. So I don't know. What sounds good to you guys? Chad, what do you think Pettis should do at this point? Or what's the best move for him, maybe promotionally?
I mean, I think it makes the most sense for the organization to kind of hold him out and wait for the unification bout, just because that fight, I think, sells itself just on the basis of being a title unification bout. And, you know, Pettis has this momentum built up with the crazy kick to beat Ben Henderson. So I don't think that it really hurts him to sit around and wait for 6 to 8 months to get that title shot. For Anthony Pettis, 23-year-old Anthony Pettis, it might actually be a good thing to give him some extra time to get used to the idea and you know, train his ass off to fight either Gray Maynard or Frankie Edgar. And you know, from a promotional standpoint, I think you can promote that unification fight no matter what, no matter if it kind of seems to those of us in the know, like maybe Pettis doesn't quite deserve it or doesn't quite like isn't a realistic challenger for either of those two guys. We're the least of the UFC's worries in terms of selling a pay-per-view, because we're just going to buy the fucking thing no matter what. That's right. They have to sell the pay-per-view to all the people who don't know anything about MMA. And to them, you know, two belts in the cage and a title unification bout, you know, that sells pay-per-views all by itself. So I would probably hold Pettis out and still do the unification bout rather than take a chance of him losing to, Evan Dunham or Kenny Florian and then just having to throw Kenny Florian in there for like his 17th or 18th shot at the title.
Right. Mike, do you agree with that? Or do you think they could use Pettis as, you know, maybe like a co-main event against one of the other lightweight contenders and really even put him over even more?
Well, I read the other day that Anthony Pettis kick is trending at one of the top Google searches anywhere. And I think, you know, that's kind of his claim to fame. And it might even be his 50 minutes when you think, you know, we're talking about whether or not he'll match up with a guy like even BJ Penn, if he sticks around at 155, you know, I think would easily go through Pettis. But, you know, it makes me wonder if the UFC realizes this when you look at their matching Ben Henderson up against Mark Bocek in his first fight in the UFC.
Right.
You know what I mean? He just went from, having the title for two or three fights and then coming back and fighting like a kind of middle of the road guy like Bocek. So I think they realize that they've kind of got, you know, some lightning in a bottle with him. And they think that if they want to use him at a promotional level, you know, they can. But they may want to hold on to him as long as they can and hopefully put him on the sidelines and see. Because, I don't think he's going to get through either of the winner of Maynard and Edgar. So,
yeah, agreed. Well, let's just hit some points on the rest of the UFC 125 card. First off, you know, just overall, of all the other fighters not in the main event, who impressed you the most? Chad, who did you like from the card?
I guess it's a sort of a big win for Brian Stan, even though it seemed like the kind of matchup to me that was a bad matchup for Chris Leben, just because Stan is a bigger more technical striker. And it seemed like a, like I said, I think on the last podcast, it seemed like a classic letdown scenario for Lieben, who seems to always sort of screw himself when he's on the verge of something big. And so, I mean, it depends on how the UFC plays it. If you know, they could probably at this point push Stan into a fight with a legitimate middleweight contender, and, you know, there wouldn't be a lot of gripes about it. So I think he probably helped himself the most in terms of just like coming from nowhere in his second fight at middleweight into sort of turning himself into a legitimate contender.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chad, you sort of called it on our last show, you know, just Lieben, he wins a couple, but he falls apart eventually. He couldn't keep his shit together for long. You know, he hit that 3-fight win streak and then he followed it up with a DUI and a loss to Brian Stann. I mean, do you think that the UFC sort of did him a disservice in this matchup, or could they have done anything different with him? Or was this the right way to go if you're guiding Chris Lieben's career? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, in hindsight, I wish I would have had the balls to actually pick Brian Stann over on Versus, where I do head-to-head picks with Ariel Helwani, because right. I did have a sinking feeling in my gut that Chris Lieben was going to lose this fight, just because I do think it's a bad matchup of styles for him. And you've got all these intangibles of him, like, kind of, you know, like I said, screwing himself when he seems to be on the verge of like of putting it back together again. In terms of like of the UFC's handling of him, I don't think it was necessarily a disservice. It would only appear to be a disservice in hindsight if they give Brian Stann a fight with Wanderlei Silva.
Yeah,
because at that point,
it's not fair.
At that point, it appears to be not fair. But, you know, the UFC's handling of Chris Lieben has always been a little bit back and forth, I think. On one hand, you could say they've given the guys so many damn chances, you know, over and over and over again when somebody else might have been cut for all of his various indiscretions. On the other hand, it does sort of seem like they've always been a little bit lukewarm on the guy, in that, you know, he puts together a nice win streak in the octagon, and then you got to believe that the UFC knew exactly what it was doing when they threw him in the cage with Anderson Silva for Anderson Silva's octagon debut.
Yeah.
So, and understandably so, I think, you know, if you're the UFC, you don't necessarily want to throw a lot of promotional weight behind a guy like Chris Lieben. But at the same time, you know, it, in my heart, I feel for the guy a little bit, because I do think he sort of deserved a bigger matchup than Brian Stann in this fight. But, you know, in a realistic way, I understand why the UFC kind of slow played him a little bit.
Yeah. It's not the most dependable dude in the world. So, I mean, these things happen. But Mike, on to you. Who impressed you the most from this card outside of the main event?
I'm going to say Dustin Poirier, because everything we heard about Josh Crispy, he was like kind of the guy that everybody said was going to be the next big thing. And he was one of these fighters that everybody talked about was the next phase of fighters who began fighting in MMA from a young age. He's a guy like Rory McDonald. And, you know, there was such a buzz around him. And then he basically got dominated the whole fight by this Dustin Poirier, who I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about before the fight. You know, there was Jacob Volkman too, was pretty impressive considering what he did to Antonio McKee. But, you know, there's a lot of winners, I guess, on the card. Diego Nunes, you know, he beat Mike Brown, who was a champion a few fights ago. So I guess there's probably a lot bigger losers on this card than there are winners, because guys like McKee, I don't know if the UFC are going to keep him around, because he was talking about how, you know, I'm going to go through the 155-pound division, I'm going to have the belt. You know, he's kind of like the Chael Sonnen's, like, I guess, bizarro world Chael Sonnen, where he's, you know, he's got the talk, but he hasn't backed it up, really. He hasn't lost, I think, in 8 years, they say, or 7 years, and then he came in and just fizzled in the UFC. So if I had to pick one, I would say, I'd say that Poirier, I guess. My French isn't that great, even though I'm Canadian, but yeah. I think he's probably the biggest winner on this card, because you never know. He may be, Crispy was supposed to be fighting Jose Aldo on this card. So, you know, he's probably gone down a few notches in the eyes of the UFC, and Poirier will probably make it onto the main card of the next show that he fights on.
Yeah, Poirier looked like a total beast. I mean, he made his name in that fight. I guess one other guy I wanted to sort of send props to is Thiago Silva. Not that it was the most thrilling or impressive fight against Brendan Barrow, but it was just a different kind of fight for him. You know, I thought it was a smarter fight. I don't think I've ever seen him follow that sort of game plan where he used his wrestling and he was wearing an opponent out from the top. It seems like he was taking advantage of Vera where he's vulnerable. Like he just maybe did, you know, he did the research and he came in with a great game plan and it worked out for him. And I think it sort of bodes well for his career that he could sort of evolve past that Stan and banger. Because you look at a guy like him, and the other one that comes to mind is like Thiago Alves, where it's like, you know, he's got great striking, but if you come up against a guy with like good wrestling, he's going to get, you know, he's going to get worked. And I see a guy like Thiago Silva evolving and add something new to his game plan. And it just, it's a good sign that he could sort of develop in the division, and then he's not just going to be this sort of mid-packer that's a great, you know, he's got good knockouts, but he's not going to reach the top of the division. So I was impressed by him. Of course, that fight also said a lot about Brandon Vera's inability to compete, but maybe we can touch on that later. But Mike, you also brought up Antonio McKee, and I was just wanted to kick that back to Chad, because Chad, you've covered the Antonio McKee beat for us on Cage Potato. I was just wondering if you had any other overall reactions to his unsuccessful debut.
Yeah, wow. Wow, that sucks.
Sucks for who? For him, not for us. It's hilarious for us.
No, for us, it's hilarious. For him, it sucks, man. If Antonio McKee has basically been talking about his own greatness for like the last 5 years, and then to come in and drop a fight to a really a nobody like Jacob Volkman is, you know, it's incredible more than anything else. And it's, you know, and then Antonio McKee cuts this really sort of un-Antonio McKee interview after the fight, where he talks about how nervous he was and how the UFC is intimidating and this and that. And so it begs the question, you know, can a guy who's been undefeated for the last 7 or 8 years and has been fighting for, you know, 10 years or whatever, can that guy truly suffer from octagon jitters, or has Antonio McKee just been vastly overrating his own talent for the last 5 years while he's been feasting on, like, you know, inferior competition in the minor league?
That's possible.
So, I mean, I'd like to see the UFC give him one more fight just to see, just because, you know, he has been kind of dominating the competition in other organizations so thoroughly that you'd like to see him get one more fight just as sort of a litmus test to see if he's just a talker or if he really was kind of psyched himself out for this UFC debut.
Right. Well, you know, we touched on McKee. We sort of mentioned Vera, although we want to say a little more about him later. But who else was sort of disappointing to you or least impressive? It didn't sort of meet up to expectations. Mike, was there a fighter who just didn't come through for you?
I guess looking at all the guys that lost, I thought Mike Brown was going to do a lot better. I haven't seen his fight yet. Yeah, McKee, I've seen him in the MFC, and he's one of those guys that I don't look forward to seeing fight, but I thought, you know, he might come out with a bang, because his last fight, remember, he had that whole, if I go to decision, I'm going to walk away from the fight. I guess he didn't keep that promise with this fight, but yeah, Grisby probably was the one that disappointed me the most, because and even seeing the way that he handled guys like Mark Hominick, who I've kind of followed his career right from the beginning here, and I thought would have done a lot better against him, I think he probably was the biggest letdown of the card for me.
I think for me, sort of Dong Young Kim versus Nate Diaz was disappointing on both ends. And I sort of saw that coming. I knew that Diaz could be controlled on the ground despite his, you know, jiu-jitsu pedigree or whatever. And Dong Young Kim, he's been great at staying on top of guys. But I'm not sure if the Asian market needs their own John Fitch. And, you know, as far as him calling out GSP, he'll need to win 8 more fights before that ever happens. But, you know, Kim, he's just sort of another one of these dull fighters that he's developing into. And Nate Diaz, like, you know, I hate to see the guy lose because he's so impressive. I mean, he's very talented, and you know, he looks great when he's winning, but he's just got this giant hole in his game where he just can't do anything when a good wrestler is on him. So I was just like, I was very unimpressed by both of those, sort of let down by both of those guys in that fight. Chad, anything else to add on that topic?
Yeah, I think Grisby and Brown were pretty underwhelming. I've been on the Josh Grisby bandwagon for a while now, just because he looked so impressive in a lot of his other fights. And the Mike Brown fight, which, like Mike, I haven't seen it yet, but I mean, when you're doing your picks for that card, you just see those two names and you're like, oh, Mike Brown's a gimme in this fight, and then he goes out and loses it. So yeah, those two guys would probably be my picks.
Yeah. The last fight that we didn't touch on from the main card, at least, is Clay Guida versus Takanori Gomi. I think we all had a feeling that Guida was going to win, or I know I picked him. I think you did too, Chad. I don't know about you, Mike, but you know, Guida's, he sort of had his new style. He's doing this sort of Dominic Cruz impression, and Gomi sort of looked befuddled and lost out there. And when it was all said and done, Guida had his third straight submission victory. So he looked impressive. Gomi, I don't know what you do with this guy. Does he even deserve a spot in the UFC anymore? It's hard to say. And then what do you do with Guida at this point? Do you think he can, you know, go on a legitimate title run, or is he just going to be, Is he just sort of going to stay where he is? Is he going to be able to beat good guys, but not great guys? You know, what do you do with Guida and what do you do with Gomi? Mike, any thoughts?
I was as surprised as anybody when Mike Goldberg pointed out that Gomi's first a wrestler. How many times have we seen Gomi use his wrestling
in a fight?
You know, I'll be surprised if they keep him around much longer because I'll bet you they're paying him a pretty penny to fight. I don't know exactly what his salary is, but I can't see him taking, you know, less than some of the other guys that he's going to be. He'll probably be put up against a mid-level guy in his next fight to see how he can do. But I don't know, something about watching Clay Guida fight, that whole hair movement thing he was doing just annoyed the shit out of me. I was watching it going, man, this guy, he's winning. He's doing better than Gomi, but he annoyed me. He's one of those guys I just can't stand watching fight. Even, you know, everybody talks about the energy he has going out to like the weigh-ins and stuff where he's jumping around and everything. He totally reminds me of Captain Caveman. Anytime I think of him, he's just, you know, jumping around like a, I don't know, it's just...
Well, okay, is it really just the hair that bothers
just
you?
Something about, it's just, he just is so unorthodox and so, he kind of flies in the face of every, you know, everything I've learned about kickboxing and jiu-jitsu and everything else. Just, it's like he relies on that to throw people off, just jumping around, bouncing around. But I don't know, I don't know how he will do against a guy. I'd like to see him... He hasn't fought Stevenson yet, has he?
Who, Guida? I don't believe so.
No, you know, against a guy like, just to see if he's up that upper echelon. I guess Stevenson hasn't really been there in his last couple fights, but I guess
he just beat Mac Danzig, yeah.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, so I don't
know. Wait, did Danzig just beat him?
Yeah, Danzig beat him.
So, hey, Wikipedia answer.
Let's put him up against Danzig then. You know what I mean? I don't think he's ready for a title. People talk about how he's going to be. You think so?
Oh, yeah. You know, Danzig was coming off like, you know, some losses. Oh, you're talking about Gomi?
Yeah, no, let's
scratch this entire last minute off record.
Yeah. I'm just talking about how with Gomi, it's not really a step down because Gomi hasn't really done all that much to impress. But I don't think he's ready for a title shot like some people are saying. Maybe give him the winner of Soteropoulos and Seaver, so which will be probably Soteropoulos. So to me, I don't think he's deserving of a title shot with some of the wins that he's gotten lately. So, but maybe that's just because I can't stand watching him fight.
Chad, any reaction? How far up the ladder do you think Guida can get? And is there any more value left in Gomi?
Well, you know, Guida's one of those weird cases of a guy who's been around for so long that we all sort of think of him as a known commodity, that we know what he's capable of. And we've seen him kind of be this guy who can beat, you know, some mid-level guys and most of the lower level guys, but kind of falls short against the top competition. So in that sense, I think he's a bit of a promotional quandary. I don't know exactly what you do with him. Maybe you do bump him up to sort of the next level and see if he can hang. And then if he puts together a nice win streak, then you could think about giving him a title shot. But I do think he would have to win a few more fights before you even consider that. And as far as Gomi is concerned, I mean, if the UFC is just going to keep doing more and more shows, adding to their total show count every year and doing all these different television deals that they keep promising us they're going to do, maybe you do keep him around. Maybe you make him a gatekeeper of sorts, especially with all the new WEC lightweights coming in. Maybe you match him up against one of those guys just to kind of see what they've got. But it does seem like he's a weird case of a guy who, a couple few years ago, was one of the best fighters in the world and was kind of running through people in pride, and now just kind of seems like he's done, which I think is weird, because I don't think he's that old, is he? Does anybody know? Because Mike, get on Wikipedia and see how old he is.
Oh, I'll Wikipedia. Do that right now. Takanori Gomi is
32.
So that's not that old. I mean, he's getting up there, but it's still, I don't know how else you
it's
explain
not old,
the
but
fact.
He's been competing since 98. So once
in fighting years, he's like 42.
Yeah. He should look like one of the Nogueras. That's he's got that many years on him.
But he's Asian, yeah. So he doesn't show it.
Right. Yes, moving right along. last thing I wanted to talk about for this card, you know, we've already heard about Phil Baroni's firing. Do Brandon Vera and Marcus Davis deserve the axe as well? One of them, both of them, none of them. What do you think, Mike?
Vera's three fights in a row. I don't know why they're keeping, and the performance he put on against Silva was shameful. It didn't seem, sure. You know what I mean? Like at the very beginning, I thought, wow, he's actually coming out. He's throwing some kicks. And then he gets that one like kick knockdown, which was more of a trip. And he's like basically thinking he won the fight. He's got his hands up in the air. I'm like, come on, seriously. But as you pointed out before, Matt Brown has got a fight coming up and he's lost. I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason to the firing. Maybe they're going to go after the Pinoy market somewhere along the line, or, you know, I don't know why they're keeping him around, but.
Well, I don't think you can assume that quite yet. I mean, it's less than a week after the show. We could hear next week that he's been fired.
We could, but we've already heard that, you know, I guess Barone's pretty vocal though. You don't hear a lot from Brandon in the media. So I guess there could be some firings, but I don't know. I would be surprised if they fired him just from knowing how they've kind of coddled him the last couple of years and, you know, brought him back and put him up against some of the guys they put him up against. Even, you know, they're talking about, I remember Dana said that he thought he won the fight against Randy. So maybe that's a gimme for him. I don't know. But to me, he should be gone. You know, he needs to go and get some wins in like King of the Cage or something, get his confidence back, because you know what? We need to see the old Brandon Vera.
Yeah. Where's he been hiding?
Oh, man. You know what? Somebody tweeted the other day about, you know, there is no such thing. It's a mythical beast. He's been talking about bringing him back for the last five fights. So it's true. I don't think that there even was an old Brandon Vera. I think maybe, you know, talking about your Can Crusher article the other day, I think was an apt comparison for him.
He needs to crush some more cans if he wants to stay on that list.
Yeah, there's got to be some cans they can bring in. Maybe they should put him up, you know, bring him back up to heavyweight, put him up against Mark Hunt.
Yeah, exactly.
Why are they giving him a second fight other than it's in Australia?
I have no idea.
It's ridiculous.
I have no idea.
Oh, I forgot Chad was on this call too.
Like right now?
Yeah.
You already forgot Chad was on the
line? We're just having like a two-way conversation there for the last 10 minutes.
Chad, are you there?
I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
Well, Mike and I were talking about guys getting fired after UFC 125. He thinks that Brandon Vera is not going to get fired. I think we both think that he deserves to be. Marcus Davis is another name. And if you want to throw in Mark Hunt as a, why is this guy still around? Please do. But specifically, do Brandon Vera and Marcus Davis deserve to get fired? That's question one.
Well, Brandon Vera, like you guys were saying, it's weird that they haven't fired him already. And it's kind of like, it makes you wonder if they're not, you know, maybe they're just hanging on to some of these guys so other people can't sign them, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't see why you keep Brandon Vera at this point. Marcus Davis, you know, he got knocked out, but wasn't getting destroyed by any means.
He won the first two rounds of the fight.
Yeah. So, you know, I could see justifying keeping Marcus Davis around, even though, like Clay Guida, Davis is one of these guys where you look at him and you think, all right, well, we kind of know what this guy has. We know who he is and we know what he's capable of. But I mean, I don't think you cut him just because he gets knocked out in a fight where he had been winning.
All right. Well, you know, let's move on to some current events. The big story this week, of course, is Chael Sonnen pleading guilty to money laundering. For helping defraud a mortgage lender of $69,000 on a house he was selling. His own mother is part of the scheme. That's one of my favorite little details. And he pled guilty. He's rolling on his buddies to escape this big prison sentence. And now the UFC has frozen his contract. As I've been saying, Chael Sonnen is a true sociopath. Would the UFC be justified in ever working with him again? Mike, what do you think?
I think they're just basically distancing themselves from the situation now. I think they would never give up what Chael Sonnen brings. Sorry. I think that, you know, if you look at the details of the case, it's not as sinister as some people are pointing out. Sure, he did something illegal. Sure, I guess the story is that there was $69,000 that they kind of upped the price of the mortgage from the mortgage lender so that they could give $65,000 back to the guy that was purchasing the home as incentive. I don't know. You know, I just bought a house and one of the things we asked, the very first question was, could we get a little bit more for the mortgage so we can use some of it to fix up the house? Cause there was some work to do. I didn't know, you know, he obviously knew because he's a real estate agent, but you know, apparently a story I read was he was told that none of this would come back to bite him, that, you know, he'd be free and clear. He'd have $4,000. I don't know if it was between him and his mom or if who knows if he even involved his mom, if he told her what he was doing with this company that, you know, was a straw man company that was set up. But, you know, it's not like when I think money laundering, I think, you know, you're filtering money through another business that you've gotten through the proceeds of crime. Sure, it was a crime. Sure, it's technically a felony, but it's not as bad, I don't think. You know, when original reports came out that he could get up to 20 years in jail and get, you know, a $500,000 fine, for $4,000, he's not going to do that. Obviously, all the parties that are involved, apparently now he's kind of rolled over on some of them that promised him he wouldn't be named in any of it. But I don't know. I don't think the UFC, I think this whole Dana White coming out and saying, listen, we've suspended him, he's getting his life back in order, that's a PR move. You know, I have a PR degree and I know how these things work. And I know that, you know, perception is 9/10, if not 100% of PR. So they're making it look like, you know, we will not stand for this bullshit. And, you know, if he doesn't clean up his act, he's not coming back. Really, he's going to be on probation, which means he can't leave Oregon for the next 2 years, you know, or unless they get special privileges. As far as I know, like, I know that's how it works here in Canada. If somebody's on probation, they can't, you know, go from province to province without permission, whatever it is. Not from myself, because now I know that's what everybody's thinking. But you know, if that's the case, then why would they, you know, keep him on the payroll and have people start asking the question, like, why isn't he fighting? Why isn't he going, you know, on these cards or fighting anybody? So who knows? I guess we'll have to wait and see what the details of his probation are to see if he's going to be able to even leave the state of Oregon. But I think that it's all just, you know, smoke and mirrors right now at this point. They're just trying to make it look like, you know, that they're taking a stand against criminal activity, even though Dana White's laughing about Chris Lieben's DUI during the press conference the other day. It doesn't really, you know, it's kind of hypocritical to me. I know it's not maybe as bad in some people's eyes, but a lot of people look at drinking and driving as a more serious thing that could have, you know, killed people. And, you know, he made that decision and everything else. It's the same as Chael did, but
yeah.
And well, and rant.
That's all right. But, you know, I think it's the fact that it came right after, you know, Chael's thing came right after the, you know, the PED accusation that he was maybe doping and two things like this in such quick succession. Yeah. And neither of them, like, on its own is like, you know, you try to kill somebody, but it's just, you know, he has this reputation and yeah, I understand like the UFC would want to distance themselves from him. I mean, Chad, what's your take? I mean, if you were Dana White, would you just want to wash your hands of this guy? Like, he's obviously, I don't want to say he's unstable, but he's a pathological liar. Right? I think we can all agree on that. And he makes some poor decisions. Like, you know, he's a great talker and he can hype a fight, but is that enough to keep him around?
Yeah, you know, for me, I agree with everything that Mike said, but at the same time, for me, this was kind of a watershed moment for my personal view of Chael Sonnen, just because, you know, I've been kind of a fan of the guy because I do think that he's entertaining, that he's funny. And so maybe I've stuck up for him a little bit in the past more than I should have. But when you have to go and plead guilty to a crime in federal court, that's the kind of thing when put in conjunction with all of these other crazy things that he's been involved in, where at some point you have to start thinking, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire with this guy. And to me, it like you were saying, Ben, it does kind of, you know, it does kind of paint his testosterone replacement therapy thing in a different light. In that, you know, if this guy is involved in weird mortgage scams, maybe he is totally scamming his doctor to get, you know, to be on TRT and to try to gain a competitive balance.
Maybe his balls are just fine.
Yeah, yeah. Let's put Russell on it. We'll do some investigation.
I don't know.
Yeah, and let me just say a couple more things. I think if you described Chael Sonnen to Chael Sonnen as if he was somebody else, that had done all these things, I think Chael Sonnen himself would say that guy sounds like a dirtbag.
It's so funny, you know, you look at all the irony and all the statements he made in the last few months about, you know, steroids and about everything he was saying about, you know, there was something he even said on that MMA Live piece he did last week where he was talking about, you know, when you've got an agreement, you have to honor that agreement. And it's about, you know, saving face, talking about Brock Lesnar. And then you hear about this agreement that he made over this mortgage, which was fraudulent from the get-go. And it's like, man, does this guy really believe what he's, you know how some people talk them into believing that a lie is the truth? It makes you wonder if he just has such, you know, he gets up in the morning, puts on his Chael Sonnen suit and goes out and says one thing and means the other. To me, it's just, I just laugh every time that something gets exposed that he's done. And you know what? I was on the same boat as Chad, where I was a Chael Sonnen fan with all the hype going up into the Anderson Silva fight and the performance he put on. But all the, you know, all the other shit that's going on behind the scenes, I wonder if Dana even knew the scope of what was going on with this criminal case, because Dana was like, oh, he's got some other things he's dealing with. Didn't even really mention that and kind of had his back over the thing. Then this comes out and within a day he's like, yeah, we're suspending him. We're going to freeze his contract now. It's like, it makes me wonder if he's pissed that Chael didn't tell him how bad this was. Because when this first came out, it was like, there was some real estate dealings that were kind of shady or something. I remember like there was very little details on it. And it was like, you know, it was like they're talking about suspending his license, his realtor's license and all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, what could it have been? You know, like what is the worst case scenario? Well, this is like five times worse than what I thought it might have been. Yeah. I thought maybe he didn't fill out some paperwork for him, I think.
Yeah, Chael Sonnen seems to have a problem with paperwork, it would seem. Let me just say about how the UFC has handled this. Mm-hmm. How ironic is it that not 2 or 3 months ago, Dana White was saying when the state athletic commissions get involved with one of his fighters, he takes this approach like, oh, my gosh, it's the government. I couldn't possibly interfere in any of this. The government has come in and taken away these guys' ability to earn a living. What more could I possibly do to punish them? Well, as far as I know, Chael Sonnen makes his money through fighting and being a real estate agent. And the federal government just came in and took away his ability to make a living as a real estate agent. And now suddenly the UFC is going to suspend this guy. It's just like, wow, man, I guess, you know, and it makes me wonder, it makes me really want to get a look at one of these UFC contracts, because it kind of seems to me like the worst thing a guy could ever do is sign a UFC contract, because apparently the UFC can just step in and freeze your contract like whenever it wants. Is there a clause in there that says that they can do that? How long can they freeze the contract? Can they only do it if you run afoul of the law? Or like, can the UFC just sort of like sign you to a contract and then whenever they want to freeze it for however long they want to do it and just kind of leave you sit at home, unable to make a living? It's just, I'd really like to get a look at one, because it seems like the UFC...
Sorry, didn't they do that to
Arlovski
and Texas Crazy Horse?
Right,
oh, he's still in the contract that he has. They have not given him a fight, so I guess they can do what they want.
Yeah, it seems like the UFC has unfettered power under their own contracts to just sort of do whatever they want at all times.
That's why I'm signing with Strikeforce. this whole business has also reminded me. I need to make a list on the site of worst MMA moms. Chael Sonnen's mom's going to be on it, and so is BJ Penn's mom, and so is Dan Quinn's mom. So all I need is about five more, and I think I'll be good. Oh, you know?
What about Tim Sylvia's mom? I thought I read a story about when Tim Sylvia was the UFC heavyweight champion. I think there was a story about him in one of the fight magazines about how the whole time he grew up, his mom told him that he was worthless and would never amount to anything, and that's why he became a professional fighter.
Wow.
Yeah, get it from that.
His self-esteem has never recovered.
Man. Yeah, well, who's to blame for that? Probably us.
Well, you got Jens Pulver's dad for...
Right, well, the mentions. Dads will be the follow-up. Yeah. that's not even funny. That's such a horrible story. Okay. Well, you know, the other thing that we've been talking about a lot is this Strikeforce heavyweight tournament that's in the works. The bracket is now set, you know, so they say. Only two of the quarterfinal fights actually have dates locked down. They have Fedor versus Bigfoot Silva and Andrei Arlovski versus Sergey Kartanov. That's on February 12th in New Jersey. Meanwhile, Overeem versus Verdum and Barnett versus Rogers are still April TBA, not really tied down to a specific date or venue, but it'll come, so they say. Odds of this thing actually playing out to complete?
To me, it doesn't even look like a tournament. When you figure that Overeem is going to fight for the title and exactly. Then there's going to be subsequent title fights, I think they've just kind of wrapped this thing up in a little tournament bow and said it's going to be a tournament. It's just basically it's just their schedule for the year. You know, it doesn't really even – what's the prize? Nobody said what the prize is. I thought the prize was going to be a shot at the title or a big paycheck. So if you win this tournament, what do you get? Do you get a trophy?
There's got to be at least a big check.
Oh, you got to get – yeah, there has to hopefully be something. There hasn't been any announcement about it. But you know what? They may fold between now and then if they're going to put all their money in on this. I don't know. I think it'll happen in some way, shape, or form, because Scott Coker isn't a guy that, you know, doesn't want to give up even when the end is near. So I think that – it's going to happen. People are getting pissed off that we keep ragging on this tournament. But you know what? We're not the only ones. And looking at the way that things have played out for Strikeforce lately, you know, they've got Fedor has signed for at least 3 or 4 more fights. Doesn't really matter, because who's he going to fight? They're going to protect him right up to the end, hopefully get him into the final of this tournament, because they're talking that they're going to do a lot of these events on pay-per-view this year. So that's the only way they're going to make money, because I think they've just given up on CBS. I don't think there's anything going to happen. I don't think they're going to be back on a network anytime soon.
Right. Chad, your thoughts. What's the biggest threat to this tournament actually happening, and what are the odds of it actually happening like those brackets say it will?
I think that there's a 0% chance that it happens.
Zero?
Yeah. No, I can't. I'm almost speechless. Like, I can't believe that they're doing this. I can't fucking believe it. It's just, it's such a fanciful
fairy tale. It's literally incredible.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, it's literally incredible. They can't get Alistair Overeem, Fedor Emelianenko, and Josh Barnett to even fight once for Strikeforce. What makes them think they're going to be able to get a number of those guys to fight three times this year? It's crazy.
Well, no one said this year, did they?
Oh, no, yeah, sure. Maybe the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament goes on for 5 years. I don't know.
I think it's one round per year. Semifinals, yeah. 2012, finals, 2013.
And then now the title is going to be on the line every time that the champion fights. So are those fights going to be five rounds?
Yep, they are. Yes.
They are. Wow.
what a just, clusterfuck.
No, man, I'm going to go on record right now saying I think the final of the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament is going to be Valentin Overeem against Shane Del Rosario. And I think Shane Del Rosario is going to win and become the Strikeforce heavyweight champion.
Oh, man.
By stoppage or decision, Del Rosario?
Decision. Split decision.
Official pick is in. Man, that, I mean.
I looked at the alternate fight pairings this morning. You know, the I think it's Del Rosario against LeVar Johnson and Valentin Overeem against Ray Sifo. And I looked at the news and I was like, oh, you know, that's ho-hum. That's not really that interesting. And then I thought, wait a second. One of these fucking assholes is going to win this tournament. Yeah. And from that group, I think you got to make Shane Del Rosario the odds-on favorite to win the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament.
That could very well turn out to be. The other thing that's kind of strange is that, you know, just the fact that Andrei Arlovsky is in the tournament, having lost his last three fights, his last two in Strikeforce. And you know, a guy like whatever. I mean, maybe, you know, I know he's a name to put on the poster, but, you know, Del Rosario, if you really want the eight best heavyweights in the organization, maybe put him in. Maybe put, as Doug Rex 13 Richardson suggested, Dan Cormier in one of these alternate bouts. It's like they're just kind of – and Kharitonov has never fought in Strikeforce before, and his name means nothing unless you're sort of an old Pride fan. So the brackets are sort of strange all across the board, but at least one of those guys might make it all the way to the finals. Whereas, you know, Fedor, you know, contract disputes with him and Overeem sort of ducking off to Japan for a year. I mean, we might not see them again after the quarters if they ever go down. So it's a big problem. I mean, Mike, who's your pick to go all the way? Considering
I'm trying to think now how I've been trying to find out how many fights Alistair Overeem has left. From what I can deduce, it's two on his contract.
Everybody's saying two, which makes everybody very nervous.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe they'll throw the towel in as soon as he walks out for his fight against Verdum. I was surprised that they're putting that fight together, but I think it's they're basically thinking, well, he's going to be gone. We better put at least one good fight together with Alistair before he goes, or he's going to be, sure. You know, he's going to go in, crush two cans, make it to the final, walk away before the final, and just screw everything. So
right, you know, maybe the hope is. Yeah, go on.
Sorry, no. I go ahead with your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I think you have a good point. You know, maybe if he does have two fights left, maybe he fights. This is a way to set him up against Verdum for the first one, and maybe Fedor for the second one, and that's the best possible case scenario if you have Overeem under contract with only two fights left. And you know, who even cares if he ducks out? The end of the bracket is kind of, you got Barnett and, you know, three other guys, and yeah, it's not really going to matter who you know, sort of ends up there. You know, Overeem is the champion now. Verdum, this is the only fight that really makes a difference, and the rest of the tournament is sort of meaningless. But who is your pick?
We'll go with Fedor because we know he'll probably stick around and at least finish out his three or four fights that he has. But to me, I think I saw an interview the other day and Dana White still isn't convinced that Overeem is that good of a fighter. So I think their side is thinking that they're going to be going to the UFC. You know, Alistair's talked about it. His management have talked about it. I don't know if you guys got the message I sent you from Bass Boone the other day that he CCs Joe Silva and Lorenzo Fertitta on everything he sends me. So they're, you know, I'm thinking they must be at least interested, or they'd be telling him to piss off with all these emails he keeps sending them. But I don't know. It's one of those. I hope he goes to the UFC so that we can see what he's like against top level competition. But if he doesn't, I'm surprised that they haven't re-signed him. You know, they've banked their next, I guess, couple years on guys like Nick Diaz, who they re-signed, and Robbie Lawler, who they re-signed. As soon as this tournament's over, I could see half of these guys walking away. So I'm going to say Fedor's going to take it and win it. And then I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the fights. Like, I don't even know who he'll be fighting in the final. It's a toss-up. Nobody can predict. It's harder predicting who's going to be in the final than it is predicting who's going to win a fight on any given card. So I'm going to say Fedor against – oh, man. It'd be nice to say Overeem, but I'm going to say like you said, they'll probably put him in the second round. The thing about this tournament is they're not drawing names like typical tournaments. They're putting guys strategically against other guys so that they can make it into certain brackets and certain rounds of the tournament. And I think I totally think it's a move to put Verdum against Overeem just to make sure. I think they're banking on Verdum beating Overeem, and then they're going to kind of build this tournament around Verdum and Fedor in the final, because of what happened in the last fight that they had. I think that they're assuming that they want to embarrass Overeem, so his stock kind of drops when it comes to maybe him going to the UFC.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, just to sum up, we got Mike saying Fedor. Chad has Del Rosario in the final. I'll take Alistair Overeem, but it won't happen until at the earliest fall 2012. That's very,
longest
very
tournament ever.
Yeah, I mean, three rounds. We could bitch about this all day, but just, even the simple fact that the four quarterfinal fights aren't even happening on the same night is pretty sad, and it's not a good sign. But anyway, we'll move on. A lot of fight bookings lately, but two I wanted to cover that seemed pretty notable. UFC 129, Toronto, April 30th. It's going to host both George St. Pierre versus Jake Shields, and the rumor is Randy Couture versus Lyoto Machida. Let's just run these two down because both seem like pretty interesting fights. But, okay, so GSP versus Shields. Will Shields do any better against GSP than Josh Koscheck did? Chad, your thoughts?
No, I think he'll do worse. I think he will.
I tend to agree with you just because Shields has no striking to speak of.
He's sort of rightly or wrongly, I view Jake Shields as kind of like a low-rent Josh Koscheck at this point. Mm-hmm. If Koscheck and Shields fought each other, I would probably pick Koscheck. And just seeing what George St. Pierre was able to do to Josh Koscheck in their last fight, you think that this is just going to be a destruction on the part of St. Pierre.
Yeah. Mike, agree or disagree?
I agree. I don't even know if it'll go to the ground. If you look at what Dan Henderson did to Jake Shields in the first round, I think maybe GSP has a little bit more killer instinct than Dan. And, there's argument whether or not his hands are as heavy and if he has the same striking power. But I could see him kicking the shit out of Shields in the first round, like literally kicking. And I'm going to say it's going to be a first round stoppage for the first time.
Whoa.
I don't know how many fights for GSP.
I'm
going to throw that out there. And then I'm going to send this email to GSP's camp and tell him that if he doesn't, then he'll never be welcome on our radio show.
Wow, the stakes are really high then.
I know.
Wait, Chad, respond to that. Do you have, GSP by stoppage or decision? Do you think GSP can pull off a stoppage here? I don't.
No, I mean, just judging by history, you'd have to say no. And right. I don't want to shortchange Jake Shields too much because I think the guy is a great fighter. I just don't. I think that stylistically, this is just a nightmare for him against George St. Pierre, who takes away his biggest strength. And judging by what we saw in the St. Pierre Koscheck fight, it's just going to be like leaps and bounds ahead of Jake Shields on their feet. So I don't know. GSP would have to really, really impressed me with his striking, I think, in order to craft any kind of a stoppage. But I just think it'll be a complete and total domination, which I guess is sort of what we're used to seeing from him at this point.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, I sort of seeing the fight playing out sort of like his fight against Koscheck did. You know, if GSP doesn't need to go to the ground, he won't. He's just going to light the dude up with jabs and kicks. And I think that's all he'll need to do, so that's all he'll do. So, I think, it's GSP by a very lopsided decision. But Jake Shields is a tough dude, and I don't think the stoppage happens here, just me personally. But anyway, the next one, Couture versus Machida. Chad, on the site, you seem to suggest that taking fights like this will sort of result in Couture getting seriously hurt. Do you think he has a chance here, or is there another matchup that you think would be better for him?
No, I think he has a really good chance to win this fight, and I think that's the downside, because if Randy Couture comes out and beats Lyoto Machida, then there's no way that he walks away from the sport on the heels of that. I don't think the company will let him, and I don't think that his own competitive fires will let him. Because if he beats, like I wrote on the site, if Randy Couture beats Lyoto Machida, he'll have four wins in a row in the UFC, and his last loss at light heavyweight will still be in 2006. He got knocked out by Chuck Liddell. So, you know, if he wins this, there's no way that the UFC doesn't put him into a big, big money fight with one of their young stars, like a, you know, maybe even put him up for the title with whoever wins the Rashad Evans Mauricio Shogun Hua fight. And at that point, I mean, Randy Couture is going to be, he's going to be 48 and a half years old. And at some point you got to think like exactly what happened to Matt Hughes. If he keeps taking these fights and fighting these younger, more exciting guys, like I think that the potential is there for him to get really seriously hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I understand why Couture, I mean, he asked for this fight. He's like, you know, in several interviews, he's like, oh, yeah, Machida is a guy that interests me. You know, if there was a, you know, right challenge, someone like him and I return to the cage, it seems like they set that fight up for him. So I sort of get it. And, you know, Machida's sort of, now that he's coming off two losses, I guess he looks vulnerable. And Couture is a great game planner. And I think he, you know, yeah, he definitely has a good shot of winning this one. On the other hand, you know, Machida, this fight makes sense for him. Mike, what do you think about the matchup? Do you think this is good for Machida? Do you think he'll win this? Or
I think that Randy Couture is one of those guys, I think, that just beats guys just from game plan and implementing his game plan alone. I can see him beating Machida, but you know what? I don't know if this is a great move by the UFC, because if he beats Machida, and he's only got, I think this is his fifth, this will be his fifth fight on his current six-fight deal. So I think he's only got one fight left. If he beats him and walks away, Machida's going to, you know, what do you do with Machida then? He just had, you know, had two fights with Shogun. He was like the champion two fights ago, or I guess one fight ago, beginning of the last fight. And then what? You know, he's going to maybe kind of not knock him down a few pegs and then walk away from the sport. I don't know if it's such a great idea, because I think Randy's going to beat him. But in the same sense, like Chad said in his article, this could, we could see Randy Couture getting smashed too. So I don't know. It's one of those. I'd say there's probably a toss up on who's going to win. I'm going to pick Randy to win, and I still don't see why they made this fight. I know Randy talked about wanting gimmicky, you know, bigger whatever fights that don't really mean anything towards the title, but this is going to put him in title contention if he wins the fight, which is strange that they're actually doing what he said.
Yeah, you know, and if he does win. The other guy just came to me that he said he welcomed a fight with was the champion, Shogun. And interestingly enough, you know, Mauricio Hua has also said, oh, I'd love to fight Randy Couture. So it seems like they both want it, and he can sell it. So it will, unfortunately, probably happen. If Couture, certainly if he beats Machida in some sort of, you know, dramatic way, it's like, yeah, I mean, I agree. He could be the next title contender. And I don't know. A strange run for him, but you know, whatever, it's his life, and you can see why he wanted to do it. You know, one more run at his age, I think Shogun would ruin him, to go back to Chad's point. But yeah, whatever, I guess I'd be interested in seeing it. So but I agree, I think Couture could sort of grind out a decision against Machida. Man, then Machida would be down three in a row. That'd be bad news for him. Machida era, huh?
We're back with our favorite money weight fighter, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, Muhammad King Mo Lawal. What's happening, Mo?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Just chilling, dog. That's, you know, rehab and chilling.
How has the rehab been going?
Man, rehab's been going good, man. You know, everything's going good. You know, I'm actually taking my time and following through with the rehab, so I'm excited about how things are looking.
There was a story that came out this week that said that you had a tryout with the WWE. How did that come about, and what was the experience like?
I had a tryout with the WWE back in 2004, a long time ago, and they knew who I was from wrestling because they liked my persona. I was going to do it, but man, my boy, you know, Shad, Jespar, you know what I'm saying, the Beast, he told me, like, hey, he's like, Sabo, you know, I know you like this fighting thing, I know you like this wrestling thing, but you know what? WWE was always going to be around, so you might as well just go ahead and chase your dream and then come back.
I guess the timing of the story was a little misleading, because a lot of people assume that you just recently had the tryout, so it was back in 2004.
No, 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 is that, you know, the thing is, I'm still open to go back and do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And like the story pointed out, you're still young. You still got a lot of years ahead of you in MMA. Is that something you'd like to do concurrently with MMA? Do both at the same time? Or do you think that maybe once your MMA career is done, it's something that you're going to look at doing?
Once my career is done, man, that's what I'm going to go do. You know, I might as well have fun, you know what I'm saying? Because the thing is, I'm about entertaining. You know, and I think some of the people in MMA, they don't get it or the fans don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Part of entertainment. Look at what Chael's doing, man. Chael is entertaining the hell out of everybody, and some people don't get it. Some people do get it, you know? And I'm all about the entertainment, you know what I'm saying? So it's a sport as well, but, you know, the hard thing is about WWE is pure entertainment. MMA is entertainment sport. Sport entertainment. It's the same, you know what I'm saying? Except the sport is far more important, because if you're winning, they have to, everybody loves a winner. If you're winning, you know what I'm saying, they have to market you. They can't market a loser. But if you have a good persona, they can market you regardless, win or lose.
How has the fan reaction been? You know, everybody, you talk about everybody loves a winner. You know, you suffered your loss against Fajal, lost your title. Has there been any negative backlash towards you? Has there been any haters, I guess, you know, coming out and saying anything to you? Or has it been mostly a positive support that you've received from fans?
I get a lot of positive support, but at the same time, in MMA, right, fans are idiots. They're like, basically, you know, you're just because you lose, you're done. Or look at this, Alistair Overeem has had 11 losses, 10, 11 losses. Chael Sonnen has had a bunch of losses. You know what I'm saying? Everybody loses in this game. You know, if they're a loss, it doesn't mean that you're not just fighting. It just means that someone beat you, you know what I'm saying? It's the MMA game. Right? Anything can happen. Nobody's going undefeated. Nobody.
Yeah, being undefeated in MMA, it's like seeing a unicorn. It's very rare, especially at the upper echelons of the sport. Now,
if you fight for a few years, yeah, you know, say you fight for a few years and you get a few wins and you retire, yeah, that could happen, but other than that, no.
No, and that's the problem is, like you said, fans are kind of fickle. You know, there's bandwagons they jump on and jump off of as quickly as possible. I talked to Roy Nelson a while back, and he said a lot of fighters, he said, it's the same as a prostitute. You know, once the people are done with you, they kind of throw you off and they're, you know, go on to the next one. So I guess that's probably took some getting used to for you, because you never really had that before. You never really, you know, having this loss on your record too, it's tough, because, you know, I guess it was more of a learning experience than anything for you.
Yeah, and I don't care. I've lost before in wrestling. You know, to me, and people, you know, I fans, it seem like I just live to be an MMA fighter. Man, I don't give a damn about that. I like getting paid, but it's more than more. You know, it's more. I enjoy doing it. You know what I'm saying? It's a lifestyle, but it's not my whole fucking life. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these people, a lot of these fans, they think that, you know, they just because they're big fans, you know what I'm saying? They live through what we do, and then they can try to talk to us any way they can.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think part of it is that you guys are so accessible. And I don't see that with any other sport. That's something that we always go back to. You know, we talk about, you don't see LeBron James on Twitter. You don't see him on Facebook interacting with the fans. I think that because you guys are so accessible, fans think, you know, that they can take certain liberties with you guys, and they don't realize, you know, you're just a guy. You know, you're a fighter. You're a good fighter. You're a great personality. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got your family, you've got your friends, and you go home and do things just like they do at the end of the day.
Well, and the thing is, what's going to happen, like, you know, what's going to end up happening is a lot of these fighters won't be accessible. You know, they're like, fuck it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know what? I'm not going to talk to these motherfucking fans. You know what I'm saying? They just trick me too many times. You know what? And kiss my ass. That's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah.
And then a lot of fans could be saying, oh, so-and-so's an asshole. And then, you know, there's going to be a new fighter come through, be accessible. And then something happens, he says he's lost, or something happens controversial, people are going to be like, hey, fuck you, you're an asshole, you ain't shit, bitch, this and that. And they're going to be like, you know what, I'm going to follow other guys, you know, so-and-so's role, and be like, fuck the fans. I'm going to, you know, those are the ones that ruined it for everybody else. Because, you know, I saw someone write up Phil Bromley's Twitter page, you know, you're a loser, you lost, your wife's going to leave, this and that, and you ain't shit. And, you know, the thing is, you can hear a bunch of, like, you're the man, but as soon as you hear one personal thing like that, you're like, you know what, fuck everybody. And that's what happens. A lot of these fans don't understand that, you know, like, you know, you hear the fans say, I'll just brush it off, but it's easy to say that when it's not happening to you. And to me, I don't care, but when I see it happen to, like, other people, Yeah, that's, when I heard Phil say that, it makes me want to kill that person. I wish I could kill that person to send that to him. I would murder his ass on sight, dog. I'm serious.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's like anything else. You have to take the context of the person who's saying it. You know, obviously they're not at a point in their lives where they're happy with their lives that they're lashing out on somebody, you know, that goes out and puts it on the line, like yourself, like Phil. There's a lot of guys that, you know, may not have had the best record or, you know, maybe have fallen on bad times. Like Phil goes out and puts it on the line every time. And like yourself, like guys like Chael, you know, you guys are entertainers. And that's not, you know, that's a part, like you said, that people miss and they don't get the point of, I guess, as much as some people are just in it for the fighting, but it is entertainment. You know, you don't tune in and pay your $50 for a pay-per-view to see guys walk in without saying anything, touch gloves and fight. There's more to the game than that.
And that's what people want. You know, when I first started doing it, when I started telling people, like, oh, well, I get emails. Oh, you think you're cute, doing all that stuff. You just walk to the ring and fight. I'm like, nah. I'm like, hold on. First of all, you know, and then they're out here, hey, we pay your bills. I'm like, y'all don't pay shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the stupidest shit I ever heard. You know, yeah. You pay for our talent. That's what my boy Percy Crawford said. You know, the thing for the fight is talent. You know what I'm saying? And before MMA, they're like, well, the fans came first. No. When MMA first dropped, no one knew what the hell it was. There were fighters and promoters first. No one knew what UFC was. No one knew about Bellator, really. It was fighters, and then people caught wind and started coming to watch. You know, I always said the sport comes first before the fans. The fans come when they learn about the sport. It's like the UFC. When the UFC first came, it was dying. It wasn't dead. It was just growing. No one cared. People started catching on to the sport and learning about it. Then that's when it blew up.
Yeah. I think, too, people don't realize that, yeah, you've only been fighting in the cage since 2008. You've been a fan of the sport. You know, everybody I've talked to, guys from Mark Lehman all the way up to guys from Team Quest, say that, you know, you're a student of the sport that's been studying it, that's been following it. I think that maybe a lot of people don't realize how much that you've studied the sport. You know, you just came off your K-1 commentating duties, which you pulled off beautifully. You know, you wouldn't have guessed that you'd never fought in a K-1 fight before.
You know, I study everything. That's the thing. You know, guys like, you know, Mark Lehman and guys like Matt Hume, die and breathe. Because I'll sit there and talk to Mark Lehman and Matt Hume all day if I can. Because those guys are students and understand the game. Yeah. So, you know, I appreciate those guys right there.
And you've got a pretty great group of guys that you've worked under, guys like Dan Henderson. You know, you can't ask for a better, I guess, combination of different guys that you've trained with. You train with guys like even Mark Munoz, who people underestimate just because he's a newer name in the sport to some people that don't realize how entrenched he is in the sport. As people start getting smarter and smarter and start realizing more about what's going on behind the scenes, maybe there won't be this type of backlash and people forming opinions about people without even knowing.
Well, we'll see. I hope you're right, but you know, I think the thing about it is, it is the sport. We need it for the sport, because with that, then people buy to the hype. Like, you know, you got guys like they you know, remember pro wrestling? Everyone knew it was fake, but you watch the matches, you see people that actually believe it's real. They get so caught up into the guy's character that they go and just pay to watch to get beat up, even though it's fake. Well, that's what we need guys like, we need people like that still. But even though, you know, even if they still hate us or whatnot, they still have no right to contact us and say personal things like that to us. You know, that's the line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like some people are trying to use that as their claim to fame. You know, like there's the trolls on the internet that's all they want to do. It's like they want to feel special because they got a rise out of a professional athlete or out of a celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yourself, you know, we talked last time I talked to you in the summer, we talked about, you know, the beef that you had with Rampage, which is old news now. I just noticed on your Twitter page that you had something going with Rio Chonin. Is that real or is that in jest?
I don't have problems with any fighters at all.
Yeah.
Chonin's my boy. I always mess with Chonin.
He's your team quest, boy, man. Yeah. Team Quest, yeah. Ex-stablemate.
I mess with everybody. Jason High. You know, because the thing is, like, I'm about having fun. And some people, they don't get that. They just think that, you know, fighters are always got to be serious, and they don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why, you know, when this whole thing with Rampage came out, and, you know, your explanation of it, it just seems so, you know, something that because you're such an accessible guy, you're easy to talk to, you're a good guy. I don't know where the hate came from. Maybe it was jealousy. Maybe it was he felt threatened by it. What do you think started the whole beef that you had with him?
I have no idea, really. You know, I've met a few times and he's disrespectful to me each and every time. And, you know, the thing is, some people, you know, they think that, oh, you're out of line for saying that, but I really wasn't, because the times I've met him, he's been a complete asshole to me. You know what I'm saying? And I have no problem. I don't like him. I don't really care much for him, but you know what? I respect him as a man.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, I saw with his family in Tokyo to say a word. You know what I'm saying? Say a word to him, because I could have been stupid and, like, try to call him out and be dumb. But you know what? I'm not even worried about it. But eventually, you know, time will tell, and if we're going to fight, we'll fight. We'll fight eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I guess talking about fighting, you know, your comeback, has there been a date set for it, or is it just something that you got to wait and see how the rehab goes?
I wait to see how the rehab goes for right now. You know, I'm hoping sooner than later. I'm hoping in March, you know, March or April.
March or April. Now, yeah. Musasi's been named as a possible opponent for your return. Is that, you know, something that you're pursuing, or do you want to, you know, get one or two fights in before maybe rematching Fei Zhao, or is that in the cards right now?
We'll see. I don't know what's going on. We'll see. You know what I'm saying? We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to get back in the cage.
Yeah. Now, how many fights do you have remaining on your contract?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Good question. I'll be back.
Now, was there any talk about you, you know, we talked about you being our favorite money weight fighter. Was there any talk about you maybe joining this heavyweight tournament, or was that, you know, something that you weren't interested in, that there was no talk about? It seemed like a perfect fit because you've talked before about wanting to fight Fedor, wanting to fight some of these other heavyweights.
Yeah, trust me, believe me, I would have, you know, said if I was healthy. I'll try to get through that. If I was healthy, I would have.
Yeah, yeah, so, and I guess it starts sooner than you're going to be ready. Now,
yeah.
One of my favorite all-time stories you told, I don't know if many people have heard it, because I talked to you in the summer, like I said, and our recording got screwed up and I haven't been able to get back in touch with you until now, was how you got into MMA, or not even how you got in, but why you got into wrestling, why you got into fighting. It had something to do with a certain cartoon character.
Are you going to talk about what, Heathcliff?
Tell the story.
Man, the main thing about Heathcliff is when I used to watch him, he'd always fight, you know, always win. He wasn't the biggest or the smallest, but he always won. And that's one person I was, like, attracted to with. He could always fight, you know what I'm saying? He fight Spike.
Yeah.
He fought the Siamese cat. He fought everybody in one, you know what I'm saying?
And he was a true money. There was always a dust cloud rolling around with him coming out on top.
Always a dust cloud. He put on top, and you know what? He was a true money weight. He had fight. He didn't care what weight cut you was at. He'd fight you.
Yeah.
That's what our main influences of MMA is Heathcliff.
Now, cartoons also got you in trouble as a child. Tell that story. There's another going about a certain real American hero that almost got you into a little bit of trouble.
Oh, man, G.I. Joe, man. G.I. Joe almost got me killed. What happened was, you know, at the end of the G.I. Joe cartoons, they have, like, life lessons. And one of the G.I. Joe dudes fell in the water. And he was drowning, and that's G.I. Joe. Just one of the kids fell in the water, and he was drowning. And the G.I. Joe man swam up to him, was like, "Hey, Billy, calm down, and kick your legs and arms in forward and backwards motion, and you'll swim. And now you know, and no one's had to battle G.I. Joe." That's how that was. Like, that's all you gotta do to swim. I was like, "All right." I was like, "Mama, I can swim." She's like, "No, you can't." I was like, "I can swim." She said, "No, you can't." So I was like, "Yeah, I can't. I'm going to go swim with my cousin, like, you know, in a few days or something." She's like, "No, you can't swim. Go drown." I was like, "Watch me." Well, you know, time passes. You know what I'm saying? I see my cousin. We go to the pool where he stayed at. And he jumps in. His friend jumps in off the diving board. I jump in and just straight sink, dog. Couldn't swim. I was gasping. I was there sinking. They were swimming off. Luckily, someone came and saved me, dog.
So then you started taking cartoons with a grain of salt, maybe not believing anything that your favorite characters told you.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're young, you think that, like, you know, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Someone show you something, like, you know, I see stuff like on pro wrestling, and I try moves because, you know, I try to torture rack.
Yeah.
That hurt people. You know, I used to try to, you know, back then when you're young, you think that you're invincible. You can, you know, you can monkey see, monkey do. You watch someone do something, and it's just that easy for you to do.
Yeah, I had a cousin. I had a cousin that put a cape on, tried to jump off the roof like Superman, broke his arm. So it's, I know what you're talking about. I guess looking at next year, have you set any, you know, people talk about resolutions, goals. Everybody's got different things in mind that they want. Some people play it by ear. You've usually got a pretty set, you know, some goals that you've got for yourself, be they personal goals, be they professional goals. What do you want to do in 2011?
Man, I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to keep it real like always. You know what I'm saying? Stay true, money weight. You know what I'm saying? And just keep it real, man. Go out there and fight. I'm not going to, you know, everybody has this resolution that never happened with me. I'm just going to keep it. I'm not going to change that. I'm going to keep it real and go out there and fight. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking to go to Holland in a few months or maybe a few, actually a month and a half to go train with Mike's gym with Bobby Holly and Melvin Manoff and Merkel.
Nice.
And I hope I could bring somebody else, maybe Murad Buzadi or Artur Kashenko out here, or Sabik Sabidov out here to train with me a little bit. So we'll see, you know what I'm saying?
How did that pairing come about? Was that when you were at K1, you met up with those guys?
Yeah, well, I'm at K1, man. I'm a network king, dog. You know, I like to network, and that's what I do when I was out there.
You know, you talk about being a network king. I've never seen somebody so adept at Twitter, adept at using Facebook. You know, I'm terrible at it. My Twitter page, I update very rarely because I'm usually doing the Cage Potato site. But how important is that for yourself? I talked, you know, talking again about Roy Nelson. He kind of gets the whole, you know, and he reminds me of you in a lot of ways because he's talking about maybe doing pro wrestling someday. He's a big fan. But he talks about the importance of doing self-marketing. And he says that, you know, eventually – he's not going to need, and you're not going to need guys in the media like us because you can do all the promotion yourself. Is that how you see it going eventually?
Well, but I think so. I was in the media because the media will always be there because, you know, a lot of stuff we could self-promote through YouTube and stuff like that, but a lot of people were to see, where to go to websites and see interviews.
Yeah.
And that's what, it's always going to be like that. So, you know, self-promoting is a good way to get your face out there so people will always, like, be on the lookout for you. And keep your brand hot. So, you know, it just depends on who you are.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I guess looking back at last year, what was your, you know, as a fan, you know, sitting on the sidelines, what was your favorite fight that you saw last year?
Okay, Chahid versus Ambitus in K1, the K1 Max.
Yep, that was your favorite.
Yeah, hands down. Never seen anything like that ever.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what about MMA bout?
MMA bout. Masaki versus Santiago too. They're actually quite a good, you know, that one probably the best fight of the year for me, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good one. Now, if you could make one surefire prediction that people would tell you are crazy for making, what would it be for this year about any fight coming up, any fighter coming up? You know, there's going to be a breakthrough fighter, there's going to be a guy that's going to shock everyone. What would it be that you know, if people heard you right now, they'd be like, you're nuts, there's no way.
That's a good, I really don't know, man. I think maybe the insurgence of you know, so you'll see more K1 guys hopefully fight in MMA. Tyrone Spong, Gokhan Saki, the Rebel, and then hopefully, you know, my boy Sia, the killer from Afghanistan, Golden Boy fighter. You know, he's an MMA guy will get his debut in Strikeforce and knock somebody out real brutally.
Now, last question, man. Heading out here, I know you're busy. I can hear you got some stuff going on in the background. What is, I guess, somebody that you'd like to fight? No matter what promotion it's in that you've always wanted to fight, not even so much with a beef with somebody or even in your own weight class, just somebody that you've wanted to test yourself against that, you know, if you could flip a magic switch or pull a rabbit out of the hat, it's somebody you'd want to fight.
What the best fight in the world is, you know, it could be Fedor, Alistar, you know, I would test my skills and see how I do. I win or lose, you know, I'll go out there and get all I got, you know, so I'd like to see fighting with the best heavyweight, you know, whoever.
And that's something that can happen. You know, you didn't go outside of your realm because they're both Strikeforce signed athletes. So hopefully, you know, that be decent fights for both. I lied about being the last question. Who do you think is going to win the heavyweight tournament?
Man, you know what? That's a tough one, man, because there's so many killers in there. I have no idea. You know, I think about that every day. I've been thinking about that every day. Who's going to win? Because Josh Barnett's good. Yeah. People speak about Josh Barnett. Fedor's good. Bigfoot's good. You know, Verdum is great. Same thing with the Alistar. So It's gonna be a bomb, but I don't know who's gonna win.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that that title could change hands three times within the tournament.
Oh yeah.
Kind of adds a little bit of extra intrigue to it. Hopefully, though, you know, part of the talk that we've everybody's been kind of wondering about is whether everything's going to go off without a hitch. You know, we've had injuries, we've had negotiation, you know, issues that have hindered certain fights going down in Strikeforce. So, you know, if it all can happen, it'll be great. If not, then, you know, it might be a bit of a bust. But, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, everything's going to happen the way it should, and you get a shot at the winner sometime, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
I appreciate you taking the time, man. It's good to finally talk to you again. And any shout-outs you want to give or any messages to the fans?
Trap Team 13, you know what I'm saying? Everybody out there is trying to do something big.
Well, we appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon, and take care.
All right, thanks, bro.